Hey, everybody, this is Pierre Quinn, and you're listening to the Leading While Green podcast, where my mission is to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence. On this episode of the podcast, episode number 32, I'll be giving you a recap of my trip to Chicago, give you some tips for a good leadership training event. We'll talk about a kindness challenge and some insights about life that I learned from a recent game of Monopoly. So, listen up. Episode number 32. Thanks for listening to this podcast. I really appreciate all of you that take this 29 minutes out of your week to join me on this leadership journey. If you haven't by now, I want to encourage you to leave me a review on iTunes. Shout out to everybody who has left me a review. I appreciate it. And it makes a tremendous difference. It actually helps us. The more reviews you get, it helps us share this message of effective leadership with the rest of the world. So I'm recovered. I've recovered, I think. You know, last weekend, I was in Chicago, got a chance to speak at the National Education Association Leadership Summit in Chicago. And I had an incredible time, gave a breakout session on Leading While Green, How Emerging Leaders Can Ripen Into Effective Leaders, took the content from my book and turned it into an hour and a half workshop that, man, we had an incredible time. And I did something absolutely crazy. I gave away free copies of my book to everybody who was in attendance. So waiting for my shipment to come in, and I'll get those books in the mail if you're listening to this and you signed up for that book. But I really loved speaking to this group of leaders in education. I was talking to presidents of teachers unions, those who had worked in administrative roles with teacher unions, talking to those who are in elementary school, high school education, at the collegiate level. We were just talking about the challenges of working in the field of education and how to empower them to be more effective leaders. It was a leadership summit. So really focused on giving them tips and strategies, actionable stuff. So they, when they go back to the classroom, when they go back to their meetings, when they go back to brainstorming about the area where they are called to lead, that they could have some practical, actionable stuff that they can apply as soon as they get back. We had an incredible time. I think I had about 70 people in my session. It was just a good vibe, a good energy in the room, being there with all of those educators. And I look forward to going to different schools and different organizations and talking to those groups about leadership based on the contacts that I made at the leadership summit. Now, the Saturday before, I had the opportunity to go to speak at the Independence Boulevard Seventh-day Adventist Church. In the afternoon, I was giving a talk on spiritual leadership. Had a great time there as well. This entire weekend, got to see some good friends from college. We also went to high school together. Got to see one of my close bros from we went to the same church and did school together. So it was a really good trip. Got to relax a little bit, but got to catch up and tell stories. And I did the afternoon session on leadership with the church on spiritual leadership. Incredible time talking about this stuff. Like this is the area where I live and breathe and hang out and play and talk. And here's the thing that I'm realizing in order for me to be more effective as the years go along. And I got this from Darren Hardy, who's one of those top level people in personal development and has been that way for the past, I don't know, 15, 20 years. Darren Hardy said he is at the point of his career that he is only willing to work with individuals that are willing to work. He's not interested in working with individuals who are trying to change or have an interest in changing or thought about changing or doing life better or becoming more successful or better leaders. He says he's only working with those who are working towards the change that they so desperately seek. And that's one of the difficult parts of serving in a leadership capacity. You have rights, you have responsibilities of leadership, there are privileges, there are things that you have to do. What makes the job difficult is when you're working with a set of people that don't want to be trained. You're working with a set of people that don't want to be taught, that don't want to change, but then still have a high expectation. And for those of you who are younger on the leadership spectrum, how have you navigated that part? How have you navigated at this point in your career working with a team or working with an organization that struggles with changing, that struggles with adapting a new way of looking at things or a new lens? As a young leader or as an emerging leader, and my definition of emerging leader is simply changing seats. Whenever you go from one set of responsibilities to another, you're changing seats and you have to learn something all over again or learn something for the first time. So in a sense, you go back into that emerging role. So in that emerging role, how have you wrestled with being on teams or leading groups of people that it's clear they want things to be different, but they're not necessarily interested in changing for themselves? So, yeah, something crazy happened when I was in Chicago. I played a game of Monopoly, and I don't think I've played Monopoly in years. Well, no, before I get to the Monopoly thing, because I'm probably supposed to talk about that last. It was a really interesting game with these friends in Chicago and the lesson that I learned from that really stuck up in my mind. I'll backtrack a little bit. So after my time in Chicago, at speaking at the church, hanging out with friends, speaking at the leadership summit, that was just good stuff. Then this past Monday had to go to a set of meetings for pastors. There were, I don't know, 70 of us in the room. Maybe 70 of us in the room just talking about pastoral life and leadership and the things that we can do to be more effective. And I want to give you some tips for leading a training event, a leadership training event. Tips from my past experiences. I've been to tons of training events, tons of conferences, led conferences myself. I had the Leading While Green conference, had the Revision conference, which is actually coming back late summer, early fall. So I know what it's like to put together events. And you got to be very careful if you're putting on an event and you're inviting people to come to the event. You have to make sure that you're thinking about the people who you're inviting. So here are a couple of things, a couple of tips. If you're trying to put together any event, professional development for your staff, if you're trying to put together something for your church leaders, if you're having your own event, whatever it is, if you're in charge of a training event, especially a leadership training event, here's some things that you need to keep in mind. Okay, these are in no particular order. But one, what you offer has to have a motivational element to it. Yep. What you offer has to have a motivational element to it. And by motivational, I mean you have to offer something, a class, a course, a speaker, an experience that helps people want to keep going. And I hear it in the personal development space and the motivational space. I hear it all the time. You know, this motivation stuff doesn't last long. Well, neither does bathing, neither does eating, neither does working out. That's why you have to continue to do it over and over and over again. And motivation is the same way. You want to help people be in a space where they said, yeah, I know this might be tough. I know this might be difficult, but I'm going to keep going. And you do that through the sessions, you do that through the speakers. Now, it's very important that as a person who's putting together the program, that you just don't invite people you like hearing or people you have an affinity toward. Think about the needs and interests of those that you're asking to come together, to attend, to participate, and think about the possibilities for speakers or presenters that will meet to a myriad of needs, not just somebody you're used to hearing or prefer hearing all the time. So a learning event, a leadership learning event, leadership training event's got to be motivational. Got to have some element in there that helps people say, I want to keep going. It's got to have a challenge. It's got to be challenging. And by challenging, I mean to put people in a place where they're willing to reflect on how they can do better, on how they can be better. So you just don't want to motivate people to keep going. You want to challenge them to do better. You want to challenge them to look at themselves critically at the areas that they're struggling and having a difficult time and say, yeah, I can do better in this area, or this is what I need to do better in this area, or feeling comfortable with someone identifying in their space what some of the gaps are and how they can do better. So it's got to be motivational. It's got to challenge. It's got to inspire. Where motivation says, I'm going to keep going. Inspiration says, I'm going to dream bigger. So whatever you present, whatever speakers, whatever exercises, whatever reflection times, it has to have something in there where you want your people to dream bigger. You don't want the leaders you engage, the leaders on your team, the leaders you volunteer with, the leaders you're responsible for, going back to where they came from, feeling the same way. You don't want them going back thinking all of the same thoughts. You want to stretch them and have them in a place where their minds are open up to imagining things that they may not have imagined before. So it's, if you're putting together an event, it's got to have a motivational element. It's got to have a challenge element. It's got to have an inspirational element, and it's got to have an engagement element. Now, a lot of organizations, a lot of cultures, a lot of learning events, a lot of training offerings miss this point. This is why when you go to a conference, they give you name tags. The purpose of giving you a name tag is not just for registration. It's to help start conversations. So whatever you offer, whatever you put together for people, be sure to have heavy doses of engagement. Because for the most part, people have a story and they want to talk to someone else. They want to be able to resonate with someone else. They want to be able to know that somebody else understands where they're coming from, understands what they're dealing with, understands what their challenges are, and they can learn from each other. When I was giving my workshop, I put moments of engagement in there, and my moments of engagement were timed, but the conversations were so dynamic and they were so helpful to the attendees as they talked amongst themselves that I let time go. I gave them more time than I had scheduled for because I knew that that's what many of them came here for. They're in a classroom by themselves. They're in a post by themselves. They're in a position by themselves. And they need a few minutes to vent, to think, to breathe deeply, to relax, to get some stuff off of their chest in a safe environment where they know somebody else is going to get what they're talking about. So, yeah, if you're putting together a seminar, a training, a session, something, whatever it is, to help leaders, make sure you have a motivational element in there. Make sure you have a challenge element. And motivation is to keep going. Challenge is in what areas can you do better? You got to have an inspirational element to move people to dream bigger. And you got to have an engagement element. To help people interact and to talk to each other. And some of the connections and conversations that we have at these learning events, at these seminars, at these trainings are just what we need to continue, are just what we need to keep going. We develop new friends, we get new ideas, we gain new strategies, we build our network, and those things help us to continue to pursue what we've been called to pursue. So, yeah, I talked to you a little bit about my Chicago trip, gave you some tips for a training event. Let's talk to you. I want to challenge everybody on here just to be a little bit kinder. So the world is going crazy right now. North America, we got the shooting things. We got the shootings. We have the challenges with police and a recent killing in, I believe, Sacramento. We have just a general state of affairs where people are on edge all the time. I mean, driving the car, you can't drive down the highway without someone being on edge. You can't check out at a grocery store without the general sense that somebody is on edge. Like everybody's just on edge. Everybody's jumpy. Everybody's waiting for something to pop off. They're waiting to respond or to react. And I want to challenge you as a leader to be kind. There's a quote that says, everyone you meet is fighting a war you know nothing about. Every person you meet is fighting a war you know nothing about. And I see this in spaces and in places. I see this when I'm working on projects. I see this with trying to coach leaders up that many times when there is a dysfunction or an area of weakness or difficulty on the team, and it's coming from the direction of a specific person, or it could be the entire group, either way, that much of the dysfunction and difficulty is rooted in something that individual is going on, dealing with personally. Something they're dealing with personally, that they're bringing into the workplace, that they're bringing into the volunteer organization, that they're bringing into the project. And it's hard to be able to say, okay, we need you to check your behavior. We need you to check your interactions with people. We need you to shore up this area, without being able to speak to that personal internal challenge that they are having. So one of the things that's very important for you as a leader to be able to do is to be able to, well, first, be respectful and be kind to people. The words you say, how you address them, how you converse with them, how you interact with them, especially when you have to give bad news or you have to make a difficult decision. How can you be kind? And what does kindness look like for you? What does kindness look like in your office? What does kindness look like for your capacity as a leader? Is kindness a personal email to your entire staff? Is kindness a phone call? Is kindness taking people out to lunch? Is kindness just being a listening ear? Whatever your organization calls for, what does kindness look like in context? Because everybody's fighting a war that everybody you meet is fighting a war that you have no idea what they're going through. And who are the people you can be kind to on a more consistent basis? How often when you see the mailman, I know some of you don't even see a mailman, but for those of us who live in neighborhoods and you're around when the mailman comes, how many times do you speak to the mailman? How do you greet him or her, the mail person? When you're checking out at the store, at the grocery store, how many times do you actually interact with the cashier? Now, I know a lot of you go to the U-Scan section and you take all of your groceries and you put them in that cart and you go through the U-Scan. I regret to inform you that the U-Scan was not made for you. Well, let me take that back. Some grocery stores, they want you to do it all, and they don't even give you a discount for bagging your own groceries. But I guess it's something about innovation and timeliness. But when you go down the checkout aisle where you are not scanning your own goods, where you have to interact with a cashier, how are you kind? Are you asking the person about their day? Are you noticing their disposition? Is there a moment to engage in conversation? I know they're working and it may be a bit distracting, but should always take the opportunity to be kind to somebody else. Why? Because they're fighting a war you know nothing about. And we make assumptions about people based on that disposition they put off. Now, they may not be mean. They could have just gone through a difficult point in their life, and their meanness is their defense. And if this is the case, your kindness comes in. It's very helpful. So ask yourself quickly, make a list of the people who are on your team, and you say, hey, I don't work with the team, I work by myself. Well, make a list of the people who are in your house. I work by myself. I work from home. I'm by myself. Well, make a list of the people who you have to interact with. You got to interact with the delivery guy. If you're getting a takeout, you got to interact with them. You got to interact when you go to the store, and you have to interact with the attendant in some form or fashion. When you go to the mall, you have to interact with the cashier. So the people in your spaces that you do interact with, how can you be a bit more kind to them? Now, what's going to make a whole campaign out of it, a kindness campaign of some sort, and come up with a hashtag and ask you to post it on social media, ask you to tag me in it, ask you to write your comments where you find this podcast on my blog. But here's what I decided. Here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that you should be kind without incentive. And you should be kind without a social reward. You should be kind without likes or loves or shares or retweets. You should be kind because it's the right thing to do. And this is the stage of the day where my kids come home from school, so you probably hear them in the background. Doors are opening, doors are closing. It's kind of just that state of affairs. I got two daughters, 9 and 7, and they're both in elementary school, and they're coming in now from school. And it's really important. This is kind of helpful. It's really important to be kind, because the kindness that you demonstrate is reflected in the people around you. So your kids will see whether or not you're kind to other individuals, and they will begin to mimic that. They'll begin to model your actions. And oftentimes when we look at our children, some of the characteristics, many of the characteristics, all of the characteristics that we notice in our children that aren't, that we're not proud of, that we challenge them on, that behaviors we try to correct, you got to ask yourself, where do they get it from? So yeah, maybe they get it from friends at school, people they see, people at church, people on the baseball team or the basketball team. But for the most part, it comes from their interaction with you, of how they see you treating people, of how they see you interacting with people. Speaking of interaction, on my trip to Chicago, I allowed some friends to convince me to play Monopoly with them. Now, I have not played Monopoly since sometime back in college, I think, was the last time I played Monopoly. I just stayed away from the game for a number of years. Now, we had a Monopoly board growing up, and I played with my parents. I played with my sister. Monopoly was a game that we loved. My dad really loved it because he was into real estate. He was a real estate agent. So he had this way of talking around the Monopoly board and convincing people to do stuff that they might not have wanted to do. So we felt like it gave him an unfair advantage. But I convinced these friends to convince me to play Monopoly with them. So shouts out if you guys are listening, to Jeremy, to Adrian, to DJ, and to Jose. And we played Monopoly. Here's the thing. I haven't played Monopoly since my college days, so I wasn't quite sure what I was supposed to be doing. I mean, I knew how to roll the dice and I knew how to buy property. I knew all of that stuff, but I wasn't quite sure what I was supposed to be doing. And it came down to a point in the game where the game was pretty much at a standstill. Everybody who was playing the game had a couple of properties, and we were in the negotiation phase. No one had a monopoly on the board yet, and was kind of really even, and we could have just gone around paying the minimal rents around and around and around and around. But based on the different properties that I had, you could just really tell that in order for us to get something done, I was going to have to give up something to get something. I was going to have to give up something to get something. And I was in a place of analysis paralysis. I was in a place of decision fatigue, that everybody at the table, well, Jeremy wasn't, but everybody else at the table was trying to convince me of what I was supposed to be doing. Jose was like, you need to do this. Adrian was like, okay, this is how you make it work. DJ was like, man, I don't care what you do. Let's just do something. And it took 45 minutes. Okay, maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration. Nah, it was probably about 45 minutes for me to come to a place where I could make a decision. Now, when I made the decision, I recognized that I had to give up something. I couldn't have everything that I want. But by giving up something, I was able to gain. I was able to get some properties. I was able to get a monopoly. I already had properties. And I was able to survive the game. But also, in order for things to start moving and the game to pick up pace and for it to become more exciting and even more challenging, I couldn't be the gatekeeper. I couldn't just hold all of these properties, this loose collection of properties that none of them matched up into a monopoly. So I had to be willing to take a risk. So I took the risk, and the game advanced rapidly after that. So I should have known better, because these guys play Monopoly religiously. They play Monopoly religiously. All right. And I was trying to get into the game, and I haven't been around the game for a long time. But in order for me to, in order to make the game worthwhile, I had to take a risk. I had to be willing to give up some stuff, and I had to be willing to take advantage of what was afforded to me. And because I was willing to do that, the game started moving. Now, at the end of the game, I didn't win the game. I wanted to win. I didn't win the game, but I didn't lose. Well, I guess if you didn't win, you lost. Whatever. I'm trying to find some moral thing here, so work with me. I was able to walk away from the game knowing that I had played well. Or maybe not well, that I got through it because I had a lot of coaching from all the people around me. I was able to walk away from the game with an interest of possibly playing the game one more time. Yeah, we'll go with that. That sounds like that works. Here's the thing for you, leader. Here's the thing for you, entrepreneur. Here's the thing for you, business person. Here's the thing for you, teacher, pastor, wherever capacity you serve. Life does not begin to move without you making decisions. You have a set of cards in front of you, a set of opportunities in front of you, a set of challenges in front of you, a set of options in front of you, but you got to pick one. Hoping and wishing and praying that things will be different without any action on your part will leave you in the same place that you've always been. The top five things that you complain about in your organization, the top five things in your business, the top five things in your church, the top five things in your family, the top five things under your sphere of influence, those five things, what actionable things are you doing to help in those areas? Not just complaining, not just whining, not just social media rants. What practical, actionable things are you doing to make things better? And until you make a decision, I know it's risky. I know you've become comfortable with this space of complaining. But until you make a decision, then things won't pick up and things won't start moving. Yes, it's a risk. Yeah, you may lose something. But what you gain, what you have access to, and the lessons that you learn will far outweigh the things that you lost. So in your leadership, where is the decision that you're delaying to make? And know that the longer you delay in making a decision, you're actually making a decision. The longer you delay in making the decision, you're actually making a decision. You're making the decision to demonstrate that that you don't care, or you're making the decision to demonstrate that you're too afraid. You're making the decision to neglect to take the risk, and the chance that you take, the risk that you take, may just be what you need to go from where you are to where you're called to be. So that's all I got for this episode of the Leading While Green podcast. Remember, it's my mission to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence, but I can only do that with your help. So here's how you can help. Leave me a review on iTunes, a 5-star review with some comments on how this podcast has been a benefit and blessing to you would be great. Share this on your social media. Share it on Facebook. Share it on Instagram. Share it on Twitter. Share it however you hang out. So more people can hear what we've been talking about. Don't keep all of this good stuff to yourself. Don't forget the kindness challenge. I need you to be kinder. How can you be kinder? Because everybody is fighting a battle that you know nothing about. And until next time, here's what I need you to do. I need you to take care and know that you can be a better leader. It's possible. It's probable. But it's up to you. So take care. And God bless.